Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And today I thought it would be interesting to talk about some of the new happenings at museums around the country. And some of the strangest museums that I've discovered in sort of preparing for this interview today. And I want to start, Richard, with Richard Dugan, who's been our producer for almost 20 years now, is going to help me a little bit. But I want to start with one museum that I just think is absolutely fantastic. This is called the Museum of Broken Relationships. Have you heard of this museum, Richard?
You know, okay. I have to be honest with you. No, I have not. That's an interesting, not unusual. Well, that's an interesting museum. Pray tell.
Okay. So this is in Zagreb, Croatia. And two former lovers, Alenka Vistica and Gracian Grabiskic, very Croatian names. They were sculptors. They fell in love. They courted back in 2003. And it was a great relationship, a great torrid love affair. And being artists, both of them sculptors, many of the objects that they gave each other were beautiful works of art that they created, or things that were sort of off the wall, sentimental things, you know, not like your typical hearts and flowers and chocolates, but these were really interesting things. And they broke up, I think it was 2008 or so. And they decided, gosh, you know, the female of the two of them said, you know, I really would like, you know, many of those things I gave you back. They're pretty interesting to me. I would really like to have those back. And he said, well, that's not going to happen. I really like them. And so she went to a bunch of her friends and said, you know, those things that when I was breaking up with Dratzen, I gave to you. I resent giving them to you, and I would like them back. And her friend said, well, sure. Okay. So 12 of her friends gave her 12 objects that Dratzen had given her back. And so she then emailed Dratzen and said, okay, I've got 12 of the items from 12 of my friends that you made for me or you gave to me, and I'd like to continue the collection. I'm going to ask you one more time. Would you be willing to give some things back that you gifted to me while we were dating? And being an artistic type, Dratzen looked at her and said, how about we do, I don't know if I want to give you those things back, but how about we do an exhibition at what used to be our favorite coffee shop? And how about we do that exhibition and we call it A Broken Relationship? And we show the objects that we gifted each other, you and me and you, and we label them as if they were in a museum, you know, with the white labels and the spotlight above them. And we treat those things like museum treasures. Let's see if we can invite our friends and have a good laugh and, you know, kind of treasure our moments that we had and just end this idea. Well, they did. And they got together in their coffee shop, their favorite coffee shop, and they made this museum display. And the kicker was, Richard, that they asked all of their friends if they would bring one object that represented a broken promise or a broken relationship or something that mattered, a material thing that mattered in terms of a love relationship, or maybe not even a love relationship, but a friend's gift, or even a parent who had passed away, anything that had been broken, that had been lost, that was represented by an object. Would you bring those to our exhibition? And we'll have a special space in the coffee shop, they said, for you to display the object that represents a broken relationship to you. Now, that was back in 2010, 2009, 2010, when they decided to run the show at the local coffee shop in Zagreb, Croatia. Mm. And the friends loved it. They loved it. They begged the coffee shop owner to keep it running. They begged the coffee shop owner to expand some wall space. And the non-couple found themselves a sort of a couple in terms of a business venture, because the coffee shop owner said, look, why don't I charge? I'll charge, a fee for people to get in outside of the fact they're going to buy my coffee. I'm going to charge them to get into my coffee shop to see your treasures. Well, what was in there? Well, it was significant objects, like I said, art objects, love letters, love cards, things that they had made for each other that represented their love for each other at the time. And then things that they'd given each other, a key ring, for example, a matchbook from a favorite place where they'd had drinks, for example. These things, they built it into this marvelous little exhibition space. Well, that was 2009. By 2010, the couple decided, we've made money for the coffee shop owner, and we have been made into a tourist attraction. Don't forget, they started this idea back in 2003. By 7 years later, the coffee shop was now both coffee shop and private museum and making money. But the artists themselves, Alenka and Drazen, ex-lovers, ex-couple, they weren't making any money on this. And they thought, what if we bought a space in Zagreb and we call it a museum? And we just don't make our own stuff the centerpiece of the museum, but we put a call out to the public. Send us whatever it is that you think is representing a broken relationship, and we will curate, we will jury your selection. And we will be also judging the content of your narrative. So you have to write why this object represented a broken relationship. And here's where it gets interesting, Richard, because as I was thinking about making this a topic for our next talk on the air today, I was talking with a friend of mine who had just been told that she was about to receive divorce papers. Okay, so life imitating art. I'm looking into this, researching this interview, and I'm thinking, okay, what exactly would that look like in real life? And I get an email from a friend, tearful email, I'm about to be served divorce papers. And I told her, I said, it's so interesting you should be saying this. And first of all, I do sympathize. I've been there, done that. And it's terrible. It's hard. But I said, I'm studying this museum called the Museum of Broken Relationships in Zagreb, Croatia. And they collect things that represent, quite severe heartbreaks. I said, is there anything you could do where you could actually think of an object, think of what the narrative of that object means to the fact that, you and your husband are going to split ways? Could you think of a story, externalize it? Think of a story external, to what's actually happening in your world, without tears, without emotion, and think of what you could say and see if you could submit this to their museum. Because by now, Richard, 2026, that museum is not only popular in Zagreb, but it has branched out and toured. Are you ready for this, Richard? It's mm-hmm. toured 68 cities across 35 countries, including Tokyo, San Francisco, Berlin, Paris, London, Shanghai. And each of those cities, it's shown pieces of objects or objects themselves that represent a broken relationship. And they've also had, right next to the object themselves, they'd have little displays of what the object was about. A narrative, for example, piece of hair, something like that. Something that represents, so they would make a full, so they have submissions now from all over the world, narratives of heartbreak and separation from all over the world. As a matter of fact, in 2024, the second permanent location outside of Zagreb, Croatia, opened a beautiful new museum in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Wow.
So they've now got two museums of broken relationships. Okay. I'm going to ask you, before I tell you, Richard, the story of my friend who is about to become a divorcee, what she donated to the museum. I'll tell you what she donated because it was accepted recently. But I wonder if you could think, what would you donate?
Well, first of all, you referred to the word, you used the word juried. And I was thinking, okay, could be from a court case. So the jury found the spouse guilty of.
No. What I mean by jury.
I know what you meant.
An art, you know, art term. So yeah. If you're submitting
I'm
a work of art,
playing on words, playing on.
Yeah.
Words.
Okay, I get it. Okay.
And then, but of course, what object? You could also use the logo from Dateline because they deal with a lot of broken relationships. But seriously, I would say you could submit. Let's just say. Your divorce papers, okay?
No, Richard, you, what would you submit?
Oh, what would I see? Oh, wow. Well, and I'm thinking, of course, of my first marriage that ended in divorce.
Yep.
I would probably, this sounds weird, because it's really all I have left. I would probably submit one of the photographs that I still, for some reason, still have. Of my first wife and I, and then maybe
what does the photo picture?
It's of the two of us
doing what?
Sitting. Well, it's a portrait that was taken of us.
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing. Just showing what was.
Why do you still have? Why do you still have it?
I have no idea. I honestly it's like when I left, I took those with me for some reason. I think I have somewhere the marriage license. I certainly have the divorce papers or the divorce decree. All I've got left of that relationship, that broken relationship, is paper. You know, so that would be what I would be submitting, would either be the divorce papers or a photograph. Maybe of the two of us. And then, of course, to signify the broken relationship, I might tear the photograph in half.
There you go. Okay, so now, you say all you have is paper, but a photo is not paper. It's actually an image.
Well, okay, I see what you mean. But I mean, in terms of something physical, that's what I have.
So, no, but the photo is very physical because it's so interesting. It calls you back into time. I was thinking about photographs. And I was, you know, as I was studying for this interview today, I was thinking about how we perceive time, because part of this museum is devoted to time itself. So, you know, the idea that a broken relationship has its onset in a time, in a space, in an era. And then that relationship, like the picture, for example, you have of you and your ex-wife, it may picture like when was the divorce final, by the way?
It was actually, amazingly enough, it was 26 years ago last month.
I see, even remember the month. It pictures, I know, isn't that funny? It pictures the clothing of that time. It pictures does. The ear of that time.
Yeah. It was also always clean shaven and short hair.
Yeah. It pictures you when you had hair at the time.
That's right. Exactly.
So, you know, this is the thing. So I think that, you know, this museum is onto something. Museum of Broken Relationships. Now, let me tell you what my friend did, what her submission was. I was thinking of a way to get her out of her, you know, funk about her sadness over, by the way, this husband that I never really liked, but put it that way. She was about to be receiving divorce papers, and she knew that I was thinking about doing a show on the various interesting museums of the world. I mentioned to her the Museum of Broken Relationship in Zagreb. Look at the website. Look at their website and see what they like to curate. What do they like to have sent to them? And so she did. And she got on the phone to me and she said, my soon-to-be ex, this past Christmas, Richard, Christmas 2025, made me, before he ended up having an affair, he made me a birdhouse out of wood.
Oh, wow.
And I thought it was very sweet. I love my birds in the backyard. And so he made me a birdhouse out of wood. And I decided I was going to take a Vaughn and Bushnell claw hammer.
Oh, no.
Made in 1869.
I hear where this
I got a laugh out of you. I'm going to take a Vaughn and Bushnell claw hammer made in 1869, American made. It is called a California Framer is the name of it. It's a vintage hammer. And it's a hammer, Richard. I don't know if you've ever done kind of this sort of framing work, but it's huge. It's about, you know, it's like 16 mm-hmm. inches long. Wow. And it has that claw on the end of it. You know, it's a quite aggressive, old, weighty piece. And I'm going to take the hammer and smash that birdhouse. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to send both the hammer and the birdhouse to the Museum of Broken Relationships. And I'm going to send them the narrative of how this happened. I'm going to send them that this was a Christmas gift this past Christmas, that this was in the light of the fact that he was, shall we say, unfaithful at the very time he was building this birdhouse. And it just was the epitome of what she felt at the moment. And we have just recently heard that they've accepted this as part of their display. So they're going to put the broken birdhouse in the display in like a diorama style. Mm-hmm. And they're going to put the 1869 Vaughn and Bushnell hammer right next to it. Like you would, you know, we used to have in our school back in Deerfield, Illinois, break this glass and there'd be an axe behind it.
Oh, wow.
They're going to do the same thing with break this glass. And there's going to be the Bushnell 16 inch hammer behind the glass.
Honestly, that
was the perpetrator. Yeah. The perpetrator of this birdhouse being taken down to smithereens. So that's a connection between a Santa Barbara story and the Museum of Broken Relationships in Zagreb. So I want to continue on with the idea of why. So if you go onto the website, Richard, and you look at the Museum of Broken Relationships, you're going to find that they have some pretty deep and philosophical ways. Of course, they're Eastern European, the Croatian, the people are so interesting. They have a very interesting way of communicating what they think of as a broken relationship on their website. They are approaching this as a non-couple. They're still together in business. They still run the museum together. They did have a relationship in 2003. That's long gone. Now they're business partners, artistic partners. They write about the fragility of human relationships on their website, and they write about the political and social and cultural circumstance around relationships. And so if you look at a relationship, it's not just you and, you know, your ex-wife, for example, but what was going on in the world? You know, there's political. What was going on in your social world? You know, whose friends were you, for example?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, what was going on culturally? 26 years ago, I mean, culturally, what was going on was we were turning into a new millennium, weren't we? We were entering, yeah, it was the YQ something?
Y2K, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what was going on as you were sitting for your portrait with your ex-wife. So you see, there's all this cultural stuff going on. It's about story. It's about identity. It's and also in the case of my friend where she's smashing up her birdhouse with a Vaughn and Bushnell 1869 hammer that her husband owned that she, you know, had the birdhouse created for her as he was having an affair, et cetera. Well, that's about catharsis, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Okay, a question. How many pieces of broken relationships do you think the museum has in their collection?
I'm going to put it in maybe, I'm just thinking, is that thousands?
Yeah, 3,500 mementos of broken relationships donated by individuals around the world. Each has a memento and a story next to it as you tour the museum. And they're also, by the way, a section on the website there where they've got the virtual museum. So you can actually, like in the case of my friend with the birdhouse actually has been accepted as an object. So they're going to mount the object. They're going to actually use it as a piece of material. But let's say you have maybe a lesser fantastic story than our Santa Barbara story here about the birdhouse and the smashing hammer. Let's say you have a lesser story. Well, okay. They have a section on the website for the material remains of, but not material, virtual material remains. I love how they put it, virtual material remains. So you could submit an object, have a picture of it, and have a story about that object. As a matter of fact, you could do that with your portrait, you and your ex-wife. You could submit that, and they would put that up on their display virtually. So there's a virtual part to their museum. That actually is a little more comprehensive, that virtual display. I took a look at it. You can actually, on that virtual display of their of broken relationships, you can give dates and locations of relationship. You can give notes. And then, you know, this is a web museum, so the donors can upload a lot of documents and images and personal collections, et cetera, into the web museum. And it has taken off. And as I said, in the last 25 years or so, the museum has shown in 68 cities around 35 countries in the world, some of the world's biggest cities. They usually mount the collections alongside another museum, for example. And that's the first on my list to talk to you about today, the Museum of Broken Relationships in Zagreb. And then I wonder, maybe should we go to quick break? And then the next museum on my list is the Museum of Jurassic Technology in Los Angeles. I want to tell you about that, Richard, and tell you just exactly what that museum is all about when we get back. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. I'm Elizabeth Stewart, and I'm talking today about the craziest museums in the world that actually work, that actually have made an impact. In the case, one of my parameters, Richard, for this show was the museum has got to be up for at least 20 years, and not just a flash in the pan idea, but a real idea that's caught on as a museum. So we'll talk about the Museum of Jurassic Technology in a minute. Don't turn that down. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and my partner John just walked in the room. I think he heard me talking about the Museum of Broken Relationships, and he asked Richard if he could break into the conversation a little bit. So here, let me get the mic to John.
And of course, I said no, but no, go ahead.
John, yeah,
go ahead.
Richard.
Hello, everybody. And I just wanted to ask, if I was to make a donation and it was accepted, would I get a tax write-off?
Oh,
interesting. Interesting.
Okay. Well, all right. So here, this is a question I can actually answer being an appraiser. If you were donating to an American museum and it was a 501c3 designated not-for-profit under the U.S. code, tax code, yes, you could claim a value. If it was under $5,000, you could self-report that value to the IRS. If you were donating to a foreign museum, for example, the Museum of Broken Relationships is in Zagreb, Croatia, they probably do not have a U.S. designation as a not-for-profit. So for you to take a tax deduction, you've got to be donating to a not-for-profit.
So it's not possible. I see.
So what are you thinking of donating?
I got nothing.
Yes, sure.
I wondered if the people that, you know, donated things could get a tax write-off for their broken relationships.
Well, actually, John, you could do that if you gave. You could do a tax write-off. The only problem is down the road, you would be dealing with the IRS, speaking of broken relationships.
Yeah, right. They'd break you for sure. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, that was an interesting question because it has to do. So a lot of the museums that I researched for today, some of them are foreign, some of them are U.S. This next one I want to talk about is a U.S.-based museum, and I it's one of my favorite museums in the entire world. This is the Museum of Jurassic Technology. It is close. And listen, listeners, if you have not seen it, it's in Culver City. Richard, you and Amrita have got to go. It's so interesting, so quirky. I want to refer you to a book that was written about it called Mr. Wilson's Cabinet of Wonders. And this is a book that was written, I think it's 2009. Mr. Wilson in the title refers to the founder of this museum, who is a very quirky individual. I've actually not met him, but I've seen him sitting behind the desk at the museum. When you say museum, you know, you get a picture of like the museum I grew up with in Chicago, you know, the Art Institute of Chicago with the beautiful Roman style facade and the stairs leading up, the grand stairs and the two lions, you know, on either side of the stairway. That's a museum. Now there's a museum. This is a storefront in Culver City on kind of a seedy street, next to a tire shop on one side, and it's, you know, it says in little letters on the top of the storefront, Museum of Jurassic Technology. I got the bright idea a couple of years ago when I first heard of this museum. I was studying at USC, and I was taking a master's there, and my teacher was a scholar of museum studies. And my professor said, if you want to know the antithesis of a museum as we know it, as we've been brought up as kids to understand it, you want to go see the Museum of Jurassic Technology in Culver City, little hole in the wall. It makes you question the observer's relationship to the context of a museum. It makes you look at it and say, wait a minute, is this a museum? And if this is a museum, my dry cleaner is a museum. Is anything, you know, what defines a museum? And, you know, so like I say, Mr. Wilson's Cabinet of Wonder is the book written about it. Lawrence Wexler wrote that book. Definitely a must read if you're going to go visit the museum. Richard, you've got to go because, I mean, and I'll lend you my book about it, you know, this book, Mr. Wilson's Cabinet of Wonder. Mm-hmm. It's run by this guy, David Wilson. David is a polymath. And what that means is he's a scholar of everything, and he's extremely bright, Mensa level, you know, and he's the last time I was at the museum, he was out on the front street, which, you know, you kind of have to step over people because it's one of those streets in Culver City. Mm-hmm. He was playing the accordion outside of the museum. And then you walk into the, you walk into the museum and it blurs the line between fact and fiction and art and history and museums and truth, illusion, collecting, display. I had the bad taste to bring my mother to see this museum years ago. Now, Rich, I've told you about my mother. She's extremely, she just passed away a couple of months ago. I miss her dearly. Extremely logical, mathematician, musician. If it's not logical, she cannot see it. She had trouble understanding jokes, trouble understanding poetry. She had trouble understanding any kind of abstraction, whether it be visual or otherwise. Total opposite of her daughter, me, but she had no, I mean, as far as any kind of, symbolism, way beyond her. She just, it was either fact or it didn't exist. Mm. And so I brought her to the Museum of Jurassic Technology, in which she actually had a little bit of a meltdown, because I'll give you an example. In this museum, there is a needle that's made out of wood, you know, like a darning needle. It's carved out of wood, very, very small. And in the eye of the needle, the artist has done a life accurate, but not to scale, of course, ant, crawling bug.
Mm.
So he's carved this tiny ant, even tinier than a real ant, in the eye of a needle. Mm. And the display looks at the eye of a needle with a microscope trained upon this tiny little ant inside the eye of a needle. And next to that display, where you see the, you're allowed to look at the microscope, you know, and look at the eye of the needle, and you're looking at that. And there's a one of those things that museums have next to it, which is a box that tells you what you're looking at. You press a button and the box gives you a good 45 minutes of detail on the species of the ant as you're looking at the ant in the eye of a needle. My mom thought that was real. That was okay. That for sure. That is, it's meant to teach me about the ant. Now, she was disappointed because after she got through 45 minutes of hearing about this particular species, genus, all Linnaeus, you know, classification, all the scientific jargon about the ant, she said, this doesn't really teach me anything about the ant. I thought this is a museum. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to learn something here. I'm supposed to be shown truth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I said, Mom, that's the point. It's a spoof. This has nothing to do with truth. It has to do with the way that we're told that truth has to be digested.
Yeah.
And she said, I want to go. I can't stand it. They're screwing with me. And, you know, this is supposed to be a museum. I don't think we should. I think we should ask for our $5 admission fee back. This has nothing to do with the museum. Well, that was the point. The point was, this doesn't have anything to do with the museum, but it has everything to do with the museum because it questions the idea of context. Richard, if you see a work of art and it's in the Chicago Art Institute and you say, my gosh, what a brilliant work of art, would you feel the same way about seeing that work of art if it was in somebody's storage locker or garage or hanging in your attic somewhere? You know, you would feel differently. Context matters. And the way it's presented as a scholarly piece of research, that matters too. You see, that's why you should definitely take Amrita, take your wife, go see the Museum of Jurassic Technology in Culver City of all places. Now be aware, it's only open in the evenings, I think only three nights a week, and it's by appointment only sometimes on Saturday. Now, and you speak directly to David Wilson and a very small staff. Mm-hmm. You can donate. I've had a client of mine who's tried to donate to the Museum of Jurassic Technology. And you may say to me, well, what did he try to donate? He tried to donate a spirit house, which is a Thailand structure, like a dollhouse. And in Thailand, you've got these little tiny dollhouses inside your house, and they're meant to house the good spirits. So in front of the house, you would put fruit and perfume and flowers, and you'd put sweet things to eat and this sort of thing. So you're propitiating the good spirits in your house. You have a house for them. Yeah. And my client thought, oh, this is a perfect place to donate a spirit house because there's really nothing in the house, but yet it's supposed to have contained spirits. So this is perfect for the Museum of Jurassic Technology. And yeah. What you're going to ask me now is, what does the title mean?
Well, when I think of the word Jurassic, obviously the first thing that comes to my mind is obviously the movie series Jurassic Park. But I have a feeling the word Jurassic doesn't mean that in this context.
Well, it kind of is similar because I don't know if David Wilson had that movie in mind, but the Jurassic period is the period in which the dinosaurs are just on the cusp of dying out. Mm. So it's a period in the history of the world, millions and millions of years ago, just before the dinosaurs go extinct. And if you listen to the title, the Museum of Jurassic Technology, it's a, what do they call it, anomaly, because there is no technology as the dinosaurs are roaming the earth that in the way we, techno, in the way we understand yeah. technology. I mean, technology is a creation, it's like sometimes it's called a human creation, or sometimes animals occasionally use a stick to rub their back, for example. Mm-hmm. There's tools.
I know. I was talking with someone who made the reference to Stone Age technology, like the club, or maybe the first wheel,
yes,
that kind
yes,
of stuff.
Definitely. Going, there's the onset
again,
of
going back to context, what you were talking about before.
Yeah. So there is technology. We're calling Neanderthal human technology that's happening as in the dawn of man. And there is definitely, we are tool making people, but we don't necessarily, or tool making animals. We don't necessarily think of Jurassic animals as tool making because Jurassic animals are the dinosaurs. So, I mean, it's an anomaly in terms, but your Museum of Jurassic Technology, I think, is meant to say, okay, well, what does that exactly mean? And so it made you question, just like the meshing of the two words Jurassic and Park mm-hmm. make you question, well, is this a museum of dinosaurs?
Yeah.
Is it a park of dinosaurs? Well, but how can that be a park of dinosaurs? So yes, I think that there was some of that going on in his mind. Yeah. I want to tell you my favorite exhibit there is a exhibit of the world's tiniest mice. I don't know where they found them, but they're stuffed, they're what they call taxidermed mice.
Taxidermed, yeah, huh?
And the exhibit is called Mice on Toast. I just knocked Richard off his chair. How many of these miniature mice can you get on a piece of average toast, morning toast?
Yeah.
And the exhibit is very scholarly. The mice are the blah, blah, blah species, genre, blah, blah, blah. And here's the toast, which is made from blah and blah. And this is the ingredients of the toast. And our eminent scientist, resident scientist, Dr. So-and-so, did this magnificent experiment with the volume of the miniature mice on toast. And, I don't know if it's still up, but it was because they do circulate their exhibits. It was hysterical to see my mother try to put it into context of, I'm supposed to learn something from Mice on Toast. I know I am, because it's got a museum in the title on the doorway.
Right. Before we go to break, I just will mention that Les Carroll, the general manager of the radio station, and I, we actually had a conversation about turning the radio station into a museum, because we had so much old audio equipment, analog as well as obviously the digital computer. And quite honestly, I used to have a lot of audio equipment, analog as well as digital, that I had been collecting over my career, which I got rid of. When we moved, I said,
in the last move?
In this last move.
Okay, Richard, I got bad news for you.
Uh-huh.
That stuff is really hot right now. I mean, and this is so interesting to me because my clients do this. They hang on to it for 30 years. Yeah. And just when the market starts to think it's really cool and nostalgic and it starts to raise to in popularity to what the Gen Zers, the Gen Xers, you, us boomers, sell that stuff. Yeah. And they sell it right the week before it hits the main article in the Wall Street Journal saying, guess what's hot? Analog recording stuff. Well, what's hot also? The cassette tapes, the VCR tapes, the VCR tapes that you used to have to rent a movie on, the cassettes.
I have those. Now I have the tapes. I have VCR tapes.
Okay,
and I have
that's
cassette
hot.
Cassette tapes. But that's I do have a cassette player. I do not have a VCR, but I can get a converter to transfer those to the computer.
That's fine. But that's not going to make you any money selling.
No.
What would have made you money selling is the analog equipment you gave away.
Right. Well, as they say in comedy, timing is everything.
Right. Let's go to break, and then I've got one more museum to talk about, the Museum of Folk Art. And this is a fantastic, this is a real museum, as my mother would understand it to be a museum. It have something to teach you. By the way, Museum of Jurassic Technology taught me a lot about the blurring of truth and fact and how truth and fact are presented. And boy, isn't that the whole idea? Let's go to quick break. And then I want to talk about the Museum of Folk Art, which is in New Mexico. It's one of the world's most important folk art museums, and it's in Santa Fe, and it is definitely worth a visit. You will really enjoy my description. So don't turn the dial back in a minute. The third most important strange ass museum on my list is, the Folk Art Museum in Santa Fe. It is highly innovative. What they are doing there in Santa Fe is they're taking the idea of folk art and making it part and parcel of our daily culture. In a really interesting, so what I study is material culture. You know, as an appraiser, I'm looking at material culture every day, whether it be art or silver or porcelain and people's collections, etc. But the Museum of Folk Art takes this one step further and says the creative power that's within every human has the power to change lives. And they do all kinds of wonderful displays that are, what do you call it, community centric, so that they're teaching people to use their inner creative artist and say, you are the folk artist. You are the folk artist. And yes, there's been other folk artists that have come before you, and we're going to show you some of their work on the walls and in music and in dance and all sorts of other ways of showing folk art. We'll show you that as we are a museum, but we are also going to be encouraging you to use everything you do every day. Like, what was it? Mother Teresa said, do every small thing with great love, you know, and to make everything you create a work of folk art. And this museum was founded in 1953 by Florence Dibley Bartlett, who was a rich older lady in New Mexico that liked the New Mexican folk art, but she was a real visionary. She was a founder and a world changer because she said, yeah, okay, in 1950s, you know, things that were considered tribal or women's or any kind of outsider art that was not white male, that was considered folk art. She said it's all folk art. and everything is done by folk, and so it's all folk art. So she started in the 50s to curate exhibitions of multiple perceptions, and she said, "Okay, look, let's look at this perspective. Let's look at this perspective. Let's look at this." She actually communicated in her tenure as the director there, which lasted for about 20, 30 years. She started, she was right at the dawn, Florence Dibley Bartlett, the founder, she was at the dawn of a lot of the world technology. And she believed that the technological innovations of the 60s and 70s, that was also folk art. That emerging technology was also folk art because it was for the folk. Now, this is the 70th year of the museum in existence, the founding of the museum, the 70th year of the Museum of Folk Art in Santa Fe. And she has firmly ensconced her, what do you call it, a motive for being, the mission statement right over the door: the craftsman is the bond between the peoples of the world. It says over the entryway of that museum, the craftsman is the bond between the peoples of the world. And think about it. Really, that's the truth. The craftsman, craftswoman, craftshuman, the people who create is the bond between the peoples of the world. Multiple visions are great. There's a Hispanic heritage wing, a whole wing that was founded that is devoted to this Hispanic heritage. Of course, they're in New Mexico there. There's a gallery called the Gallery of Conscience. In 2021, the Gallery of Conscience did a creative response to the global pandemic.
Oh, wow.
That was folk art. It's one of the world's largest folk art museums, and the donors have been incredible and sometimes anonymous, giving, you know, whole collections to the museum. And I'll mention one that interested me. I don't know if you've seen, a lot of women use a product called Neutrogena.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So you can get it a cream, and, you know, it's all over the world, Neutrogena. And the founder of Neutrogena was a collector of textiles and ceramic and wood carving, especially native New Mexico style pieces. And, you know, wealthy, wealthy man. He collected about 3,000 pieces in his career. And there's a whole wing called the Neutrogena wing, and it's the Neutrogena CEO wing. It's named after him. And there's all sorts of his collections over the years. So it's a vast museum, huge, a 70-year-old museum. And well worth a trip. The Gallery of Conscience was focused during the pandemic, for example, of what people have created during the pandemic. And I got to say, Richard, I think all of us during the pandemic, I'll exit the show by telling you, I threw them away because I saved them for a while, thinking one day one of our museums is going to ask for all of us Santa Barbarians to send in something that they made over the pandemic. I had a favorite pair of socks, and I couldn't go shopping for these socks, and I couldn't find them online, and I love those socks. So every night, just to sort of anxiety reducer, I darn those socks. Remember darning?
Oh, yeah,
thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I darned those socks, and I darned them so many times that the socks were no longer socks. They were just the darning thread, you know, and same with a pair of little panties that I loved that were cotton, and I loved them, and they were totally elastic was blown out. And so I kept on. So that museum, the Museum of Folk Art in Santa Fe, would consider that part of the conscious revolution that the pandemic urged us to do, you know, bake bread, darn socks, be creative. And so anyway, that's my spiel for today, Richard. The three museums I like the best that are really strange and really thought-provoking: the Museum of Broken Relationships in Zagreb, which will recently feature a broken birdhouse and the hammer that did it, donated by a Santa Barbarian. The Museum of Jurassic Technology in Culver City on a kind of a crummy side street. Really worth a trip. And the Folk Art Museum in Santa Fe. Other honorable mentions include the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, the Artist Micropia Museum in Amsterdam, the Tenement Museum in New York. I visited there. So interesting. And the Anahualcali Museum in Mexico City. All are off the wall. All are worth a trip. I hope you enjoyed that, Richard.
Oh, that
I did.
Was fun. That was
okay.
Fun.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.